Facebook.
And support for KXE comes from Woodworks Homes, building handcrafted new homes and providing remodeling services in northern Minnesota. Learn more at woodworksmn.com.
And we receive support from North Country Dental. Thanks to John Luth and the staff for supporting local public radio. North Country Dental Service, practicing family dentistry in Bemidji.
And this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Check out playlists, podcasts, and more at KAXE.org.
And weather today, snow and cloudy skies, highs 26 to 33 degrees, light west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, evening lows in the upper 20s, low 30s with northwest winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, cloudy, highs in the mid to high 30s, northwest winds up to 10 to 15 miles per hour, evening lows in the mid to high 20s. And Friday, partly cloudy with highs in the low 30s, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Now for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. More than half a century after his death in Vietnam, a Talmon Marine's family will be presented with a Silver Star Award for Corporal Norris Brendan's actions that saved the lives of many fellow Marines. Sergeant Major Edward Neese served in the same company as Corporal Brendan during the conflict and shares on the KAXE Morning Show that Corporal Brendan was hit while providing cover for fellow Marines from a school building in Way City during the 1968 Tet Offensive.
Somebody ripped off a door off the hinges and they put a Marine on the door, and on the door was this Marine with a bandage on his head and had red hair. Now, the only Marine who had red hair in our platoon was Corporal Brendan. So I knew right away that Corporal Brendan had been hit. And we wouldn't find out till a couple of days later that he died en route to get medical treatment.
A Silver Star is the third highest military decoration for valor in combat, awarded primarily to members of the armed forces for gallantry in action against an enemy of the United States. The retired Sergeant Major Neese says Corporal Brendan should have received the award many years ago. VFW Post 1720 in Grand Rapids will host the award ceremony Wednesday afternoon. State Auditor Julie Blaha toured progress of Mesabi Metallics' direct reduction grade iron ore pellet plant earlier this week. The 7 million metric ton per year plant in Nashwauk is projected to start commercial operations early in 2026. Direct reduction grade iron is more cost effective for use in electric furnaces, where most modern steelmaking is moving away from coal-powered blast furnaces. In a release, Blaha says it is encouraging to see new life in the mining operation, crediting mining as a key to the state's economy. The multi-billion dollar project is currently under construction on over 16,000 acres of land, and once completed, it will be the first new mine and pellet plant in the state in nearly 50 years. Edina Realty will pay a $3.5 million settlement after Attorney General Keith Ellison found the company breached its fiduciary duties with its clients. Ellison says in a news release that Edina Realty convinced customers to purchase home warranties from Home Security of America, a third party, and the company received payments from this third party without disclosing that information to its customers. As fiduciaries, real estate brokers are legally required to act in the best interests of their clients. Ellison says Edina allegedly violated that duty by secretly accepting payments from Home Security of America to push home warranties onto their clients. The AG's investigation alleges that Edina's conduct harmed Minnesota consumers by causing them to purchase HSA warranties that they otherwise would not have purchased, as well as violating Minnesota's Deceptive Trade Practices Act and Minnesota's Consumer Fraud Act. St. Louis County and the City of Aurora will present a preliminary layout for County State Aid Highway 100 this week. The two entities are planning a study of the 1.83-mile L-shaped segment, which is also known as 3rd Avenue North and Main Street. The study proposes the construction of a bridge that would eliminate a railroad crossing. Following the meeting scheduled for 6 p.m. Thursday at the Aurora Community Center, county engineers will move into the design phase of the project, which is slated for the 2026 construction season. State health officials are urging Minnesotans not to eat certain organic carrots due to a multi-state E. coli outbreak. Five Minnesotans became ill between September 21st and October 6th. One person has been hospitalized and no deaths have been reported. The Minnesota Department of Health linked the illnesses to eating organic carrots purchased from Costco, Target, and Hy-Vee, and brands have included Good & Gather, Bunny Love, and Cal Organic. Grimway Farms recalled multiple sizes and brands of bagged organic baby and whole carrots on November 16th. These products are likely no longer in stores but may still be in people's homes and should be thrown away. That's it for the Up North Report from the KEXE News Desk. I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River, dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
And that is the Up North Report, local news from our region. Coming up, we're going to be hearing more from Morning Edition, talking about the EU ambassadors visiting the U.S. and activists in Hong Kong. We receive support from the Rife Center in Grand Rapids, presenting a Christmas carol on Monday, December 2nd at 7 p.m., featuring the classic tale of redemption following Ebenezer Scrooge on his journey from nasty curmudgeon to warm-hearted saint. Tickets available at therife.org.
And we receive support from Hills Country Greenhouse and Custom Sprinklers, located 5 miles south of Bemidji on U.S. 71. The Hill family is hosting a Christmas festival on December 7th and 8th, also offering Christmas trees, winter greenery, custom porch pots, and a holiday photo booth. Open until December 20th. More at Hills Country Greenhouse on Facebook. We have some live music coming up tomorrow, Thursday, November 21st. The Hooligans are at Kagan Cork in Bemidji at 5 p.m. And on Friday, November 22nd, known only locally at Bridget's Pub, 6 p.m.
And don't forget, Give to the Max Day is tomorrow, but early giving is open now. Each gift you make to KXE through GiveMinnesota.org earns KAXE a chance to win a $500 golden ticket and other prizes. Visit GiveMN.org and search for KXE KBXE to donate today.
At a CNN town hall in May, then-candidate Trump said he would end the conflict easily.
I'll meet with Putin. I'll meet with Zelensky. They both have weaknesses and they both have strengths. And within 24 hours, that war will be settled. It'll be over.
But that war may be entering a new phase following the Biden administration's decision to allow Ukraine to fire long-range U.S.-made missiles into parts of Russia. We wanted to get a European perspective on this, so we've called the European Union's ambassador to the United States, Ambassador Jovita Neluchina. Ambassador, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
So on Tuesday, Russian President Vladimir Putin responded to Biden's decision on missiles by lowering the threshold for Russia's use of nuclear weapons, essentially allowing Russia to use nukes on any nation that it believes it has attacked it with the backing of a nuclear power. How is that being seen within the EU?
This is not the first time when Russia has threatened nuclear escalation, which completely is irresponsible. We all know that nuclear war cannot be won, so must not be ever fought. And, you know, Russia can have a lot of documents, but the problem is that Mr. Putin never obeys either his own documents or the rules of the international society. And on top of that, I think that it does not really change our position. We support Ukraine and we stand by Ukraine as long as it takes.
On this question of the U.S. finally allowing these particular missiles to be used, this is something that Ukraine has been asking for months. So now some are saying it's too little, too late, but others wonder whether this could actually push Russia to the negotiating table in a serious way. What do you think?
Well, we all want peace. And, you know, our position was always that it has to be, if it comes to the peace table, Ukraine has to come there with, from the strength position, because Ukraine was attacked by Russia, not otherwise. And it, this peace talks should happen with Ukraine only sitting at the table. And Russia's war of aggression is against Ukraine, and it's not only a war in Europe. It has global consequences, you know, on the stability, on security, on prices of energy, on many more aspects of our lives.
It does seem that this incoming administration seems to be skeptical of the U.S.'s support for Ukraine. What if Trump opts to withdraw U.S. support of Ukraine? Is the European Union prepared to assume the burden of defense spending?
Well, look, this war is lasting already for 1,000 days, and European support was unwavering all through through that period. We committed $168 billion for Ukraine for financial, economic, refugee, and defense support. You know, it's at our borders. It's not somewhere else. You cannot switch it off like a TV. The war is going on every day, and millions of people of Ukraine have gone through an unthinkable suffering. I think that it's already very much clear that European support is there, and we just have no choice, as the same as Ukrainian people has no choice.
So, well, that would indicate that there would be no consequence for the administration pulling back. If you're saying that the EU is prepared to step forward now, I mean, does that send a signal that there's no reason for the Trump administration not to withdraw its support of Ukraine?
Well, we did support, and we are continuing support Ukraine together. You know, the capabilities of defense capabilities in U.S. is much bigger. There, Russia's Putin actually said not once and not twice that this war is not only against Ukraine. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't need extra territories. Russia is large. He needs to change the government in Ukraine. He wants Ukraine has no choice. And again, he is fighting this war against the West as such, not only as against Ukraine. And he said that publicly. I think that it's his choice is actually to undermine our way of living. And I think that everyone in Europe and here in U.S. takes very dear our values, our democracy, our choices we make, and our possibility to live in freedom.
So before we let you go, and just very briefly, if you can, Ambassador, in his first term, Mr. Trump made it clear that he is skeptical about the NATO alliance. Do you think that European leaders might be able to persuade him otherwise in his next term?
The world changes. European countries already are paying up to 2%, and I think everybody is ready, because the war in Ukraine, Russia's war in Ukraine, actually changed the way of thinking.
That is the EU's ambassador to the United States, Jovita Neliupshena. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us and sharing these insights with us.
Thank you.
The Biden administration wants more money for disaster recovery, but the agency that responds to natural disasters, FEMA, is fending off attacks in Congress. The administration is seeking nearly $100 billion in additional funds after this year's onslaught of hurricanes, flash floods, and wildfires. Meanwhile, FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell spent Tuesday on Capitol Hill. She defended against accusations that the agency responded slowly to disasters and discriminated against some hurricane victims for political reasons.
NPR's Debbie Elliott is covering the story. Debbie Criswell testified before two House committees. So what did members of Congress press her on?
Well, specifically, this was about FEMA's response to Hurricanes Helene and Milton, catastrophic storms, you'll remember, that struck the southeast in late September and then early October, back to back. More than 200 people were killed, and the storms caused billions of dollars in damage. But there's one particular incident that prompted this scrutiny. A now fired FEMA supervisor directed workers who were doing door-to-door canvassing in Lake Placid, Florida, to skip over houses Texas that had Trump campaign signs in the aftermath of Hurricane Milton. Now, that former crew lead, is what she was, Marnie Washington, has since claimed she was following standard protocol to avoid hostility in the field, something workers did face after disinformation spread in the wake of Hurricane Helene. So the focus of these hearings is whether there's a wider cultural problem at FEMA. Here's House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, a Republican from Kentucky.
The same employee alleged on TV that this was not an isolated event and that FEMA essentially treats the homes of President Trump supporters as if they were homes of people with vicious dogs. This is unacceptable. Americans demand accountability.
He says this incident amounts to the weaponization of government. Comer also entered into the record another reported incident of a household in Georgia being told by a FEMA contractor that they should remove any Trump campaign material. Now, that's something NPR has not verified.
So how did Chief respond?
In both the House Oversight Committee and then earlier before the Transportation and Infrastructure panel, Deanne Criswell repeatedly denied any wider issue in the way that FEMA doles out disaster aid. She says Marnie Washington's instruction to disaster assistance teams to avoid homes, quote, advertising Trump, was reprehensible and at odds with the agency's mission. Here's part of her testimony before the House Oversight Committee.
This type of behavior and action will not be tolerated at FEMA. And we will hold all people accountable if they violate our standards of conduct. I do not believe that this employee's actions are indicative of any widespread cultural problems at FEMA.
Now, Democrats on the panel, like Ranking Member Jamie Raskin of Maryland, tried to point out that President-elect Trump and his allies had pushed conspiracy theories about the hurricane response.
FEMA aid workers have been forced to work under a cloud of propaganda and lies concocted to erode public trust in FEMA. Because of this disinformation, many victims of hurricanes have rejected federal assistance, and others have even harassed and threatened FEMA workers.
Now, Criswell says an internal investigation is underway, and she's asked for an independent probe by the Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security.
That's NPR's Debbie Elliott. Debbie, thanks.
You're welcome.
This afternoon on All Things Considered, hurricanes have decimated Florida's clam industry over the past year. It is a multi-million dollar business in the state, and it will likely take some time until farmers can fully recover from their losses.
So it's going to take fortitude, patience, perseverance, resources, and any kind of financial disaster assistance that USDA and other programs can provide.
You can listen wherever you are, online, on your phone, on a smart speaker, or on the radio. This is NPR News.
You're listening to member-supported KAXE, KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning. Did you just ribbit?
I guess so. Man. And we're here until 9 o'clock, and then we're going to hand things over to DJ the DJ for On the River.
Yeah.
And coming up at 7:30, we've got Best Wishes also.
Excellent.
And don't forget, From the Vault is coming up shortly as well.
Oh,
the segment you helped coin the term for.
Did I? Oh my. Yeah, it's kind of, it's a cross between a vault and like a wonderland, I think, when you have that many choices.
Do you ever just sit in there and just look at the records?
Sometimes I'll like take a meeting back there, and if I'm waiting, I'll be like, I should listen to that one day. I should listen to that, and then I never have time. But I should just come in and listen one afternoon, right?
Yeah, why not?
Like on a Saturday. Because I'm not here enough.
Saturday in the vault.
Yes, exactly.
Listening to Chicago all the time.
That would be okay.
You like Chicago, huh?
I do like Chicago.
What's your favorite one?
That one. No, I don't know.
I really don't know the names of their songs.
I don't either, but I know that I know a lot of Chicago songs, but I would have to...
If You Leave Me Now, is that the name of one of them? If You Leave Me Now.
Yeah. I think so. It's too early in the morning to ask me this. Plus, you're the one.
You had to have expected I was going to bring up Chicago today.
I should have. But
it's National Absurdity Day.
I thought you were going to bring up the musical. So I
went Chicago.
I went in the wrong direction.
Speaking of musicals, you saw Scrooge the musical this past weekend.
I've seen it twice. Yes. My young Ebenezer has a line in it. And
Is he at the point where it's like, I just want this show to be over?
No, I think he's still really into it. He's really happy. He really enjoys being around the cast. He loves singing.
Does he have a solo song?
No. But he does. He has a nice voice, and he likes to sing. And there's so much talent in this cast. We should be so proud. We should be so proud of this production because it sounds amazing. It looks amazing.
How's the ghost effects?
Oh, so good.
Really?
I don't want to spoil anything, but yeah, all the ghosts are very cool. Especially Well, Marley, who we see as kind of a haunt or a ghost.
A haunter ghost, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a little bit different from he says, you will be visited by three spirits, you know, and it's like, wait, you're a spirit too, so that's...
So if we had to rank the three spirits, how are we doing it?
Oh.
Present number one, past number two, future third?
Probably. Yeah. Because you haven't seen it yet, right?
No, I haven't yet.
The Ghost of Christmas Present is... I don't know. It's so much charisma, and then just the outfit and everything. I don't want to spoil anything if you haven't seen it yet, but it's so good. And Marley has some really cool effects, and yeah, it's a fantastic cast. And Alex just likes being around all the people and enjoys. Hanging out and just getting to be part of it.
So, fun.
Yeah, he's not sick of it. I don't know. Come Sunday when it's the show in time to tear down, that day might get a little long, but it's a good
thing. Tear down is a lot of work. I keep forgetting to wear like more working clothes.
Well, it's community theater, you know, and that's just the whole part of it. You do everything together and build those relationships. It's a cool opportunity. And I think it's just a good thing to be a part of, you know, hands-on. So, yeah. And I'll get to see it probably two more times.
Wow. So,
and I'm not sick of it.
Because there's performances from the 22nd to the 24th left, correct?
Yes. Yes. The 24th is Sunday. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, and that's a matinee on Sunday. So get down and see it if you haven't yet. It's so worthwhile.
Excellent. So we also have our KAXE question of the week. What's your must-have Thanksgiving dish?
Yeah.
We'd love to hear your recipes. Text us at 218-326-1234. Heather, for your Thanksgiving dinner, what is a must-have dish? Is it cranberry sauce from a can?
Oh, no. Let's see.
Squash?
I do love squash. So I haven't hosted in a while. We've been getting out of town because we just kind of need to get... It's a time that we have off, and it's just nice to get away all together. But I love stuffing, and I make it like my mom did, which is nice. She's gone now. So it's nice to have that kind of memory and remember how we used to make stuffing together in like the huge Tupperware bowl, which I don't have one of those.
You don't have a huge Tupperware bowl?
I don't have a huge Tupperware bowl, but you know, like it's just that memory of Thanksgiving morning and we'd get everything ready together. And tons and tons of garden-grown sage goes in that stuffing and raisins, which may be controversial. What is your go-to Thanksgiving meal or dish?
See, I don't really have like a very elaborate dish. Like, I think it should have mashed potatoes with gravy because that's what I want.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Skin on or skin off mashed potatoes?
Skin off.
Off. I usually do it with the skin on. It's pretty tasty.
But what are you talking about? Like you...
I just boil them and then I mash them up and...
And then the skin's in there?
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's good stuff. He says, but the face he's making is like, no.
No, no.
It's not a visual media. It's okay to say that sounds gross. It's okay.
I'm trying to think. I'm a green bean casserole person, but we'll maybe talk about that later.
Well, we'll see if the franchise stops in and has anything to say about that.
So now it is the time of our show where we play something from the vault.
From the vault.
All right. Can you guess what it is? I already told you. Do you remember what it is?
I know what it is, and I just saw the album, and I'm pretty excited because I think we're going to do some Kris Kristofferson.
Yes, we are going to do some Kris Kristofferson. So I bought this album myself a few weeks ago and listened to it, and one song on it blew me away, so I came here to the vault to check to see if we had the record. Turns out we have a bunch of Kris Kristofferson records.
Excellent.
So if you've got an upcoming On the River show and you want to add a Kris Kristofferson song, there's a good chance we've got it. So
wonderful.
So this song is called Josie here on KAXE KBXE.
I've been chasing after Josie since the day I could run, even though I didn't know it at the time. And I followed her from Texas till she found me undone, just to jump ahead of what I'd left behind. She was proud of her young body as a body could be, on her way to be a woman of the world. And I still can see her smiling as she gave it to me, looking like a lonesome little girl. Josie, is it true that you've grown harder than your years, selling them your sadness on the street? How much did you lose between the laughter and the tears, getting back the bitter for the back to living at a time I was lost, with the closest thing to love I've ever known. And she led me through some bridges I was burning to cross, and she went and burned some bridges of her own. Now the road's a little colder every time that I leave for another empty place I've never been. I don't suppose it's likely that you're looking for me, but someday I may be chasing down again. Josie, is it true that you've grown harder than your years, selling them your sadness on the street? How much did you lose between the
was Kris Kristofferson with the song Josie from their album Border Lord. That is our KBXC From the Vault.
I like it.
Record. Are you a Kris Kristofferson fan?
Yes, absolutely.
I haven't really listened to a lot of stuff until this year when I watched A Star Is Born.
Oh, sure.
And I really enjoyed his songs on it.
Yeah, yeah. And he was part of the Highwaymen, right?
Yes, so that's true.
I grew up listening to that.
I only know the one song by the Highwaymen. I was a Highwayman.
You probably know a couple, though. You just don't realize.
That could be. It could be a Chicago situation.
It could be, yes. Absolutely.
That is Heather Johnson. I'm Andrew DeZingle. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. And time now for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, November 20th.
Ben and Ashley Anderson of Bemidji are celebrating their 15th anniversary. And Janet Florine and Kent Johnson are celebrating their 25th anniversary in Deer River.
And Josh Swenson is celebrating their 23rd birthday today. Happy birthday. And now I'm going to play a song for you. This is Mount Joy with She Wants to Go Dancing. That was She Wants to Go Dancing by Mount Joy here on KAXC KBXE. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to be hearing about a recent study about kids and watching videos online. That'll be coming up in just a little bit. I'm Andrew DeZingle, here with Heather Johnson.
Hey, good morning.
We receive support from FixCon Roofing, established in Bemidji in 1999 and celebrating 25 years of custom consultations and roof installations in the entire KAXE listening area. More at FIK.com. ATLASSCON.com.
And we received support from Atchison Tire in Grand Rapids, providing service and offering tire brands like Bridgestone, Firestone, and Toyo, serving the area since 1916. More at AtchisonTire.com.
And we receive support from the Green Heron Bed and Breakfast, a four-season B&B on Pokegam Lake, featuring home-cooked meals and all the amenities needed for a complete family vacation. More information at greenheronbnb.com. Loving the lake quietly. Now, Heather, you said you were going to mention a recipe.
Oh, yeah. This is a classic radio recipe. Okay, so have you ever...
Classic radio recipe?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Okay, well, have you ever heard of Mama Stamberg's cranberry relish?
I have not.
Okay, so Susan Stamberg, who is now retired from NPR, but I think she's still around. She's lovely. And I listened to her for years and years. She, every Thanksgiving, and I think they maybe still play it every Thanksgiving or talk to her every Thanksgiving, she would share this recipe that was, I believe, her mother-in-law's recipe for cranberry relish. Okay, I'm going to read you the recipe.
All right, here we go.
Okay. 2 cups whole raw cranberries washed. Mm-hmm. 1 small onion.
Mm.
3/4 cup sour cream.
Mm, I like sour cream.
1/2 cup of sugar.
All right.
And 2 tablespoons of horseradish.
Mm, you lost me at horseradish.
Oh, that's where I lost you. Not at the onion or the sugar. Okay. Or the sour cream.
The onion was a little bit of a, but it wasn't very much onion, wasn't it?
It's 1 small onion. So maybe like
a lot
cup
of onion.
Three. It's rather a lot of onion. So when I first heard this recipe, I thought, oh, that sounds very strange. And so basically you just grind it up all together, and mm-hmm. that's the relish part. But then I was at a restaurant and they served something that I imagine would be quite similar to this as a dipping sauce, and it was absolutely delicious.
It's a dipping sauce.
Well, it's like a relish. I mean, I think that, yeah, you could, you know, like...
Would you put it on a hot dog?
Personally, probably not, but it could go very good on turkey. I think it was served with like mozzarella sticks or something.
Oh, interesting.
And it was quite good, but I have never made it. I just wanted to see the look on your face when I read the recipe. So if you've ever made Mama Stamberg's cranberry relish or heard about it, we'd love to hear from you, or tell us what your actual favorite can't miss Thanksgiving dish is.
Yes, and you can do that by texting 218-326-1234. Now it's time more from Morning Edition.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Of all the things that cause parents to tear their hair out, screens are high on the list, especially for parents of teens who tend to have control of their own devices. The American Psychological Association has just issued its first set of guidelines for teens and their parents on how to navigate healthy video consumption. NPR's Kadia Riddle covers mental health, and she's with us now to tell us more. Good morning, Kadia.
Good morning.
So how did they come up with these guidelines, and what are some of the key takeaways?
So the APA convened leading experts on this issue to review the existing data and research. And the main thing to know from their report is that parents need to be aware of what their kids are watching. It is the wild, wild west out there. Content is very unregulated and can contain negative images of sex, violence, and unrealistic body image, which is scary. But there's also some material that's healthy and even encourages pro-social behaviors and development. I talked with Mitch Prinstein. He's the chief science officer at the American Psychological Association. He had this message for parents.
We shouldn't feel completely guilty when we hand our kids a device to watch a moderate amount of video content. But we should be not giving them completely free rein to watch anything they want, because it really depends what they're watching.
So how do parents make the distinction between content that's healthy or not?
So as just one example, the authors of this report warn about the dangers of content that encourages violence or risky behaviors. They note that when teens are exposed to this kinds of programming, they can become numb to this behavior in real life, and that can lead to reduced empathy and increased aggression. I should note that these researchers did not include recommendations around video games. This is just about passive video consumption. Researchers also call out influencers on platforms platforms like YouTube or TikTok as being especially powerful and potentially dangerous for kids. You know, these adolescent years are formative. It's a time when kids are hopefully learning what healthy relationships look like. And to that point, when teenagers watch people modeling healthy behavior, like characters or influencers that demonstrate kindness and generosity, that can help kids cultivate those same traits. Something like watching someone intervene around bullying behavior can be really instructive.
I'm just wondering how parents can have the kind of oversight that they're describing. I mean, do they have any suggestions for that?
Right. So there is literally no way that you're going to be able to sit next to your teenager and watch over their shoulder every minute. Really, the goal here is teaching them to be savvy consumers of media and just talking to them about what they're seeing. Prinstein told me that he does this with his own kids. He has a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old.
I try and ask them, what were you watching? What was the main message of what you saw? How do you feel about it now that you've watched it? And that seems to reliably bring up conversations that I want to have with my kids, where I can suggest maybe more of this, less of that, or let's talk about how to handle this if you saw that in real life.
That is helpful, but it still sounds difficult.
Yeah, you know, the guidelines do ask platforms to put some safety measures in place, like limiting the automatic playing of video one after another and reminding teens when they've been watching for a long time. But Michelle, I have a teenager at home, and I'll admit part of me was hoping for some very clear guidance, like, you know, only X hours of video content per day or only from certain platforms. Something I have to keep relearning about parenting is that I think applies here. You know, it's messy, it's nuanced, and it involves a lot of hard work.
That is Kadia Riddle. Kadia, thank you.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
Morning Edition from member-supported KAXC KBXC. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. And we're getting some texts from the text line. Heather,
yeah.
Take it away.
Oh, okay. Well, we heard from Liz at Tamarack Amusement. She says, Susan Stamberg's cranberry relish is delicious. Such a beautiful color. I've made it several times. I love it, but my whole family hates it, so I don't make it anymore. Oh, Liz, I have been in that situation with some things, and it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, I found out that my mom, when my mom and daddy was just the two of them in the family, she made lasagna once, and my dad complained about it.
Oh, no.
And so she said, I'm never making lasagna again.
Yep.
So I never had lasagna at my parents' house.
Oh, blame your dad.
Yeah.
Dad should have learned to make lasagna.
Could have had a lifetime of eating lasagna.
Like Garfield.
Like Garfield. I never understood the Garfield joke. I was like, what is that?
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, no. You left out of a whole generation worth of jokes.
And we also got another text from Lisa. It's a milestone birthday for me today. Who knew 65 would come so quickly? There are pretty snowflakes falling from the sky for me. And happy birthday, Lisa.
Yeah, happy birthday, Lisa.
And it is, well, it seems to have stopped snowing here.
Yeah,
looks like it.
It's feeling Christmassy. That it's that first snowfall. It's always like, wow, okay, winter really is coming.
Well, I heard it last night. Like, I don't know if you can say you hear snow, but
yeah,
I felt
sure
like
can.
I could hear snow.
Yeah. Yeah, we get used to that. It's kind of, well, and especially when it's kind of warm, you know, you can hear it falling sort of on the rooftop sometime.
I got a little cozy watching my movie.
Oh, what did you watch?
It's this movie called Moonrise. It's a movie from the 40s.
Oh, I haven't seen it, I don't think.
It's about this kid, or I guess, I don't know how old he's supposed to be. Like maybe 20 or something.
What era is this from?
It's set in 1948, too.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And his dad was executed for killing a man.
Okay.
And so his whole life, he has been, like, pointed out, like, well, your dad was a killer, like,
oh,
kind of thing.
Okay.
So he's got a chip on his shoulder, you might say.
All right. And who's in that one?
The only famous person I know that's in it is Lloyd Bridges.
Oh, wow.
Everyone else, wow. I don't remember their names.
He has such a long career. Yeah, and he's unmistakable, too. Just Lloyd Bridges.
Yeah, as soon as I saw him, I'm like, Lloyd Bridges.
It's the face and the voice, too. So That's
what I love. I love watching so many classic movies that you start recognizing the character actors' names in the movie. I'm like, oh, Lloyd Bridges is in this
one. Yeah. Well, Thelma Ritter. I mean, come on. Yeah. She's in so many movies. And actually, Margaret Hamilton, the Wicked Witch of the West, in a ton of movies.
Oh.
And, you know, you can't miss her voice. You just can't, no matter what she's playing or what or wearing or anything. You cannot miss her voice. She's the Wicked Witch of the West.
Have you been watching any movies lately?
I have. I usually watch classic movies on the weekend, usually when I'm folding clothes or something like that. I saw Five.
Wow.
Which was written by Arch Obler.
The movie's called Five. I thought you were saying you watched five
movies. No, not five movies. No. It's the movie called Five. I don't think it was famous, but it's from the early 50s, and it's like the survivors of some sort of nuclear incident, and so there are five left, and their fates and how they interact with each other, and it was very interesting. Yeah, was it good? I don't know.
I did go to the theater this weekend to see Heretic with Hugh Grant, the horror movie.
Okay,
sort of horror movie. It's not. Well, I guess there is some horror stuff, and it was pretty okay.
Was
Hugh Grant's great in it?
Was he charming and very blinky?
Blinky, I wouldn't say, but he was charming.
All right, cool.
He just has a natural way with words that's so fun to watch on screen.
I will say that he was fantastic in Paddington 2.
He was, absolutely.
Then that movie was better than it has any right to be.
Well, Paddington 1, I heard, was good as well. I haven't seen it.
Very good. Like, shockingly good. I know. I've seen them many times.
So, one about Wicked is coming out this weekend.
Oh,
is that a thing for you at all?
I loved the book. I devoured it in one weekend many
years ago. Wow, it's a big book.
Isn't it?
I feel like it's this thick, isn't it?
I feel like it was like 300 pages, but I could be wrong. I'd have to look, but I really enjoyed it. It's a weird book.
You're saying a book about the Wicked Witch of the mm-hmm. West from Wizard of Oz is a weird book?
Yeah. It's strange. I'm not excited about the movie. I don't know if it's just been over-publicized or... I don't know. I just don't. It's not really for me. But
you ever listen to the songs from the musical?
I don't think I have. I think I'd be more apt to see the musical than the movie.
Interesting.
But, yeah. How about you? Are you going to go see it?
I'll go see it. And then Gladiator 2 comes out this week as well.
Oh, yeah. That should be amazing.
And I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Denzel Washington's in it.
I will watch anything with Denzel in it. He's just so good.
He's great in everything. Like, yes. I've been watching a bunch of his movies this past year, and, like, if the movie is bad, it's not Denzel's fault.
Never. No, I completely agree. And there were some that I didn't love the movie, but I love Denzel.
Nice. So, support comes from Timberlake Lodge in Grand Rapids, offering endless soup and salad bar for lunch and burgers and hand-cut steaks for dinner. Online at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
Programming on KAXE is supported in part by Pickett Agency, an official MNsure partner. It's open enrollment season, and Pickett Agency is here to support the Bemidji community with health plan enrollment guidance. More information is available by calling 218-751-1213 or by visiting PicketAgency.com.
And we receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company, building a carbon-free future while delivering safe, reliable power. More at mnpower.com/energyforward. I'm going to play a song for you. I heard this yesterday on New Music, hosted by Malachi Coons.
Yeah.
And I think everyone in our little office area was excited about this song. Laura Marling has a new album, Patterns in Repeat. I'm going to play the song called Patterns.
Zina, you squared your toes, but your family nose hangs around. You steal the ballerina, everybody. nobody knows what your feet are on the ground. With ever more relief, then patterns in repeat can begin to have your children, your flock.
On today's date, November 20th, 1999, I find what may be the last dandelion of the year. Dandelions are non-native. They were brought to the United States by European settlers, and they had good reason to bring them because dandelions are fast-growing and robust, and they grow in just about any climate. And they offer greens that can be eaten, the flowers can be turned into a wine, and the roots can be dug up, ground up, roasted, and turned into an ersatz coffee. So lots of uses for dandelions, which explains why they were brought to the United States. Now that they're here, you can see that they live up to their reputation as being survivors. These last dandelions typically are grown right close to the ground, wherever there's just a tiny bit of warmth, and they turn that warmth into growth. And you'll see a flower, and a day or two later, you'll see a stalk of a seed head sticking up a little bit higher, hoping that a puff of wind will spread its seeds on.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And Amy Martinez, elementary schools in Texas are one step closer to allowing the Bible to be part of their curriculum. The Texas Board of Education took a preliminary vote yesterday to allow what it calls blue bonnet learning, Christian teachings in lessons across subjects, to be considered for optional use next school year. The final vote is Friday. Carissa Lopez is with us now to discuss. She's the deputy director at the Texas Freedom Network, a nonpartisan organization that acts as a watchdog for far-right issues in the state. So, Carissa, let's start off by just telling us what the blue bonnet learning system would look like if taught in a classroom.
Hi, good morning. Yes, so while this curriculum is optional technically, school districts are incentivized because they would get extra funding if they decide to use it. And our schools are drastically underfunded. So really the state is dangling this extra funding in front of them to use this. And you know, this curriculum overwhelmingly focuses on Christianity and the Bible, presents biblical stories as facts, whitewashes and distorts the history of religion in America, and includes errors and other misinformation.
So it's fair to assume that that's why your organization opposes it.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yes, that is correct.
And when we say optional, whose option is it? The school or the parents in that district? Who gets the option to use it if it's used?
It's the school district. It's decided by school district. And, you know, we have over 1,000 school districts in the state of Texas. It's a very large state. And they are all severely underfunded. And so the school district can make a choice whether or not they want to use this curriculum.
So what are you hearing from community members about this proposed way of teaching?
Yeah, you know, we have parents, teachers, scholars, religious leaders who are opposed to this curriculum because, you know, while we definitely believe that the influence of religion in our history and society should be taught in our schools, this curriculum goes way beyond that and promotes religious literacy and undermines the freedoms of families to direct the religious education of their own children without state interference. You know, our neighborhood public schools are called upon to serve students and families from a variety of faith traditions or none at all. But this curriculum instead suggests that this is the only religious tradition of any importance.
How much of this do you think, Carissa, is a Texas thing? My wife grew up in West Texas, and she used to tell me all the time that they didn't learn American history, they learned Texas history. So how much of this is just a Texas thing?
Well, yes, that is true. If you go to school in Texas, you have a whole year of just Texas history. We also, though, spend a lot of time learning about world history and American history. But, you know, as the saying goes, as so goes Texas, so goes the country, right? We export a lot of our policy to the rest of the country. And across the country, including in Texas, we are seeing the far right attempt to inject one particular view of Christianity in our public schools. I mean, Ben Carson, for example, Project 2025 co-author, it played a large role in the development of this. And so I anticipate that this is something we will begin to see across the country and other states.
Carissa Lopez is with the Texas Freedom Network. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin.
And you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew Drazingle here with Heather Johnson.
Hey, good morning.
And in a bit, we've got headlines from NPR, but in about an hour, we're going to hand things over to DJ the DJ for On the River.
Always a good one. Support for KAXE comes from the Grassroots Concert Series presenting Charlie Wagner on Friday, November 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Live Well Nightclub and Coffee Bar in Nisswa. Doors open at 6:30. More information can be found at grassrootsconcerts.org.
And support comes from the Minnesota Historical Society, presenting holiday sleigh rides at the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids, featuring a horse-drawn sleigh ride through the Northwoods to make holiday memories in the great outdoors. Private group reservations available upon request. More information at mnhs.info/forestholiday.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and the land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen to KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
And we've been talking about the question of the week. What's your must-have Thanksgiving dish? Share your recipes by texting us at 218-326-1234. And what was the cranberry one, yeah?
Oh, Mama Stamberg's cranberry relish. It's an NPR classic. Probably going back to the 90s. I'd have to look that up. But
are you a Macy Day's parade watcher on Thanksgiving?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I forgot about